This is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 919, KTCB Tillamook 895, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. And if you were listening last week, you would have heard Judith Altruda and Marcy Merrill talking about the 13th annual Tokeland North Cove Art Studio Tour tomorrow. And one of the extras there is that after the tour, there's stuff happening that's going to benefit Okasta High School art program. Love that. Supporting our local schools. It is time for Arts Live and Local, and Arts Live and Local is brought to you in part by Columbia River Coffee Roaster, wholesaling fresh roasted coffees since 1992 at 279 West Marine Drive, the old Finnish meat market, with Three Cups Coffee House up front, espresso, coffee, homemade baked goods, Wi-Fi, and gifts open every day. And I want to start the show right out with some music from my first guests. Well, they're not singing it, but I think you'll recognize it and know what's coming next. Thanks for being here, folks. And a big shout out to Squamish and Sydney and Robin and Omaka and to Seashell Tessa and to New York, 66th Street, Long Beach, Wyoming, wherever you are, including San Jose, Costa Rica.
My life flows on in endless song, above Earth's lamentation. I hear the real, though far off, hymn that hails a new creation. Through all the tumult and the strife, I hear that music ringing. It sounds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing? What though the tempest round me roars? I know the truth, it liveth. What though the darkness round me close? Songs in the night it giveth. No storm can shake my inmost calm, while to that rock I'm clinging. Since love is Lord of heaven and earth, how can I keep from singing?
Well, the good news is, folks, you're not going to have to keep from singing. Absolutely not. If you show up tomorrow evening, that's Saturday, May 4th, at the Performing Arts Center, in a benefit for the Performing Arts Center, you're going to get to join my guests in singing and learning and enjoying thoroughly our good friend, who? Well, of course, Pete Seeger. Happy birthday, Pete Seeger. 100 years old today. And here to talk about Pete and what we're doing right here in our community, right here in Astoria, are Kit Ketchum, who started the whole thing last year. Hi, Kit.
Hi there, Carol.
Who am I? Who am I?
What's my name? What's your name?
I don't know. It's been a busy time, hasn't it? And Jim Dott, who did a fabulous job last year, narrating and is going to not just narrating, but editing, putting together, and interpreting the material so that you get the full story, whether or not you have been listening to Pete all your life, if you're old enough or young enough, or you have no idea who he is. You will.
I'm sure you'll learn something.
You will learn a lot.
I learned a lot this year getting ready for this one.
And Jim is also a wonderful programmer here at Coast Community Radio. Beyond being on the air on Bedtime Stories, he also has been putting together the chapter books for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you can tune in Sunday through Thursday evenings, 8 o'clock, right here on KMUN.
Right, and KTCB, and hear Nancy Montgomery reading little bits of this incredible story. I tune in just for that. I run to the radio, make sure it's on.
That's good.
Yeah, but right now we're here because we are celebrating Pete Seeger's 100th birthday. So, Kit, let me just start with you. You put the word out last year. How did that come about?
Well, several years before that, when I was living on Whidbey Island, we were all in a good mood. Barack Obama had just been elected. We were all thrilled. Somebody said, let's put on a show. And so I got involved in that. And it turned out to be a Pete Seeger-type show. And we had it. We had a full house. We made tons of money for a local charity and had a wonderful time in the process. And when I moved down here, and we were all so glum after the election, I thought, we need a picker-upper. And so I talked to Gina Kiter.
Oh, yes.
And Hobe. Mm-hmm. And a couple of other people that I had gotten to know in the time I'd been living here. And they said, yeah, let's do it. and so we started planning. And that was, that show was in 2018. And we started planning it in 2017,
yeah.
The summer before. We had no idea what we were doing. I mean, because I hadn't really been in charge of the one in Whidbey. I just participated. But I thought, let's just get all these bands together and all these individuals, and the word went out.
That's it. We have so many musicians around here, and singers and enthusiastic folks. So it came together, and it was a fabulous show. Now, where'd you find Jim?
We had tryouts. And,
we had tryouts.
I got the part.
That's right.
We put out the word. I invited several people whose voices I'd heard, mm-hmm. you know, on the radio or around town, and Jim and, let's see, a couple of other guys, applied, and we auditioned, and Jim was really the one who had done the most work on his audition. It was really impressive.
He was ready to go.
He obviously already had a lot, and he had put things together in a really nice way. So we thought, we can trust this guy. And of course, we knew him a little bit already, and thought,
I think you wrote and said, do you know this guy, Jim? What do you know?
I wouldn't have had to do that, I don't think.
No. Well, no. So, Jim, what have you been involved in Pete Seeger's music for a long time, or did this spark your imagination, or what?
Well, I listened to him when I was younger, and as I've listened to him most of my life, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, like a hardcore fan, I wouldn't say, but I certainly have become much more of a fan by learning about his life and listening to more of his music. So
how did you learn about his life?
Last year I read his sort of autobiographical book called The Incomplete Folk Singer, which had a lot of information and about his life and trials and tribulations along the way. But then I also read a biography just this year with the title of that song, How Can I Keep From Singing, is the name of that song. So it's emblematic of Pete, which I learned a lot more about his life. And, putting it down into, about 40 minutes of narration is really a daunting task. So we might have to have another one next year so I can keep going.
Hey,
I don't know.
That sounds, why not? After
why not?
All,
that's right.
We got started just in time. We had the warm-up.
But I found a lot of great stories. So
And so for those who weren't there last year, because I have to say, I'm in the chorus, and we stand in the back and sing, and everybody in the audience can do the same, just sing along. But I have been aware of and playing Pete's music and over Clearwater and stuff, but there was so much information that you put forth, and the way you kind of linked the songs together mm-hmm. was masterful, and I think made for a wonderful show rather than, you know, often when we go to hear a musician, you say he's a great musician, but no connection with the mm-hmm. audience, or mm-hmm. the opposite, mm-hmm. or both, you know, mm-hmm. something. But your narration pulled it all together there, so. And now people didn't choose songs according to your narration.
No, so I had to work with the song choice was. So, you know, it's a interesting. It wouldn't be the same. You know, last year's was different because most of the songs are different. And so this year's songs are different mm-hmm. for the most part. We have a few of the old favorites, yeah. but.
I just want to mention the song we opened up with, as Jim said, How Can I Keep From Singing? Pete wrote, Doris Plenn, raised in North Carolina, learned this song from her grandmother, who told her, honey, this is my favorite song, and I want you to always remember it. It was made up years ago when people like us were being thrown in jail for their beliefs. And then Doris made up the third verse, back in those days of McCarthyism.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's...
That was 1996, yeah.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. It's there's so much information. I mean, he lived 94 years.
Yeah, so it's a lot. It's a lot of years. He had a lot of adventures. And.
But when did he start putting the music out there?
Oh, in the, well, the late 40s is when, well, even in the 30s, the Almanac Singers had recordings out mm-hmm. there. And then the Weavers in the 40s. And then in the 50s, he recorded with Folkways and later Columbia, so.
But he had a pre-professional career too, just, you know, getting paid $5 for singing in bars. That's part of Jim's narration. I don't mm-hmm. want to spoil the show, but.
Well, it's interesting because around here we've got a lot of musicians who's, and other artists mm-hmm. who start out volunteering, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. giving, and hopefully at some point they get picked up and start getting paid.
That's how he did it.
He paid his dues playing for organizations that didn't have any money or much money. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Kit, what are you going to be singing?
The first song that I'm going to be part of is Guantanamera, which is done in memory of John Snyder, who sang and played so much in the show last year, but unexpectedly died 6 months later.
Yeah.
And a group of us performed Guantanamera at his memorial service.
Oh, lovely.
And so we're going to do a reprise of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one song that we'll sing, and that will close the first set.
Do you play an instrument other than your voice?
No, I wish I did, but...
Do you have some folks accompanying you? Or?
Yes, Joseph Stevenson and Larry Moore are going to accompany, and then we have three of the ensemble singers who live really close to me. we all had a rehearsal last night.
The
Alderbrook
singers.
That's right. It's almost like that.
I love it. Well, that's part of the way this thing is also honoring Pete mm-hmm. is coming together in community
mm-hmm.
because I know I've seen some of the emails. Who can, John Snyder did a lot of that last year with his guitars. Who can join in?
Yeah.
One person will write, and I can play this, I can play bass. And you mentioned Joseph Stevenson. What was, how did he take part in this?
He's been involved in it pretty much from the beginning. I just started it out through the idea out there and wasn't quite sure what would happen. Thought, I don't have a lot of time to do this on, you know, working as much as I would. But Joseph had been persuaded to at least, you know, be interested in the project. And eventually he couldn't resist, I guess. And we think of ourselves as co-directors or co-producers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then Jim, of course, became an essential piece of the puzzle. And so we've done our planning together, the three of us, for this year's show.
Yeah. Yeah, Joseph has stories galore.
Oh, he does. You'll hear some.
Yeah, you will. And I know he's listening right now. Hello, Joseph.
You mean we'll hear some on the stage?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, he has a connection to the song We Shall Overcome.
Yeah, he sure does.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, he does.
You saw that in the newspaper, probably.
No.
It was a wonderful newspaper article.
Oh, yes. I've known about it for many years because he was one of the bus runners.
Freedom riders.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, I've had him on the air talking about that too. And I'm not sure how much you want to talk about, since if it's been in the paper, then you might as well tell us. You have some new folks coming on board this year.
A few. We didn't need to do a major resupply because most people came back.
Mm-hmm.
But we did get some interesting, checking us out kind of thing. And I think probably the most interesting of the bunch has been Keith Clark, the executive director of the Astoria Music Festival, and has a really strong connection to Pete Seeger from childhood. And so he kind of intrigued us, with some of the things he knew and that kind of thing. And so we have included him in the program.
Have you seen what he's going to be playing yet?
I haven't looked at it yet. But I understand it's the original banjo that Pete Seeger had made for him.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of exciting.
It is very exciting.
I've seen Keith play banjo on the Liberty stage, actually, so I know he can play.
Well, good.
But I think the exciting part is the stories and the banjo itself.
Yeah.
And anyone else?
I think most everybody else is the same, isn't it?
But pretty much, yeah. Can you think of anybody else, Carol? You know,
ensemble singers, maybe.
Lulu Heavenrich is a new person.
Okay, so. It's too late for you to join in this year, folks, but
you can join in by coming and singing along.
That's right.
Exactly.
You'll be part of the show.
And that's the thing to do, and this is definitely all age. It's
a wonderful
way to introduce kids as well as anyone who hasn't heard Pete or who knows him well to the music. It's very joyful, and as we've all been saying, this is a concert and a sing-along.
Mm-hmm.
And are the Flats doing some of the...
Oh, several songs, yeah. They like to do the signature songs. That's mm-hmm. the old favorites. But they also like to do some of the others. Do you remember what some of them are the ones?
Well, they're going to do... we have several songs that are written by other artists that Pete...
Oh, yeah, that's an important piece.
...performed and or whose careers he was instrumental in getting started, like Tom Paxton and Malvina Reynolds. So they're going to open up the show with Let Us Come In by Malvina Reynolds.
Yeah.
I did not realize she wrote that.
Yep.
I thought it was an original.
You thought Dan wrote it, didn't you?
I certainly did.
He just sings it so well.
He does. It sounds really like their kind of song, too.
Yeah.
And that is, as you mentioned, Jim, that seemed to be a really important part of Pete's mission, his life, was promoting other people's, mm-hmm. not in order to promote, but because they wrote such wonderful... Mm-hmm.
Promoting mm-hmm. the song. Mm-hmm. He was all about the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is there something about him, again, for people who aren't familiar, or maybe they think they know Pete, just like I did last year, and is there something you can think of that you're going to... I know you don't want to give too much away, but there are people listening in British Columbia and New York City. They can't make it. They would like to, but they can't make it. Maybe even Portland, Oregon. By the way, in Portland tonight, there's a Pete Seeger show.
Yeah.
It's sold out already. So if you're out
they
there.
They can come back. Come to ours.
Exactly. Well, and I have to mention that KMUN is going to be broadcasting
the
show.
That's true, yes.
So if you are in those far off places, you can hear. It starts at 7 mm-hmm. o'clock. So,
well, you want a little anecdote? Yes. Okay. Well, Pete started out at Harvard University, but he wasn't that engaged in it, so he dropped out. And the summer after he dropped out, he decided to go, he'd become a pretty good watercolorist in high school. So he got himself on a bike and rode across New York painting, and he'd go and paint a picture of somebody's house or barn and then go knock on their front door and hope for a meal or a place to sleep. And years later, people would say, oh, yeah, are you the same paint seeker that painted my barn the wrong color in that picture?
Great.
So he did they pay him as well?
Well, you might have got a quarter, but usually it was for food. Or,
wow.
Because it was the 30s, so, yeah. You know.
Oh, yes, yes. And what happened to him during the difficult years?
Well, McCarthy?
Yeah.
Well, he was called before the House Un-American Activities Committee in 1955. And, you know, they were trying to find out who he knew and where he played. And most people took the Fifth Amendment and just wouldn't answer. Mm-hmm. And that would be it. They would be done. But he decided to take the First Amendment, mm-hmm. and that put him in contempt of the committee, and so it took him a long time to finally be prosecuted, but he was prosecuted and sentenced to a year in jail, but he never spent more than a night in jail, luckily. But it was hard, you know, he was on a blacklist for, you know, all the 50s into the mm-hmm. 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He couldn't get a gig on Hootenanny, which was a name that he brought into the folk scene. Mm-hmm. Actually, he went to a couple Hootenannies with Woody up in Seattle. That's what they called these sing-along things that they went to. And he never got a chance to be on there. Hmm. But
well, in that vein, another shout-out to Joseph. I do believe it was he who at one of our, I think it was no LNG hearings, mm-hmm. got up and started to sing This Land Is Your Land. This Land Is
My Land. I love
and
it.
Of course,
that's so Joseph.
We all joined in, and they were like, hey, this is ours. So, okay, folks, this is happening tomorrow evening. That's Saturday, May 4th. Here in Astoria at the Performing Arts Center. Again, it is a benefit for the Performing Arts Center, and it is 7 o'clock. Get there early. It's open seating, and then prepare to have a wonderful time, all-age show.
Please sing along.
Yes, do sing along. Thanks
and
so much.
And don't worry if you don't think you can carry a tune, because you're still welcome to sing.
Yeah, from our point of view. Now, if your neighbor starts poking you, that's your problem. So, okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you so much.
Jim Dott and Kit Ketchum with the Pete Seeger. And we're again wishing Pete a very happy, happy birthday for his 100th birthday. Here's that one of Malvina Reynolds' songs.
Little boxes on
Pete
the hillside.
Put out there.
Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes, little boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, and they all got put in boxes, little boxes all the same. And there's doctors and there's lawyers and business executives, and they all get put in boxes and they all come out the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martini dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, and they all get put in boxes, and they all come out the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family, and they all get put in boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
And that, again, Pete Seeger, happy birthday, Pete. And join us tomorrow evening if you're on this side of the river for the Pete Seeger celebration. And my next guest is actually going to be performing tomorrow evening, too. And he will be at the Sou'wester in Seaview. And it's a wonderful place. I was just there to help them. Well, I wasn't helping them. They were helping me celebrate their 7th anniversary. Happy birthday to them, too. And my guest is Thomas Mudrick. Mudrick.
Like music.
Like music. Well, what a convenient. That's why he became a musician, I'm sure. I've asked him to start off with a little bit of his music. Oh, that was fabulous, folks.
Thank you.
That was all coming out of one human being, and that's my guest, Thomas Mudrick. And he will be at the Sou'wester tomorrow evening, starting at 8 o'clock. And I love it.
I have been
listening to Tuvan music, actually, with the throat singing for many, many years. Mm-hmm. The Buddhist monks who did it. And then, of course, Baby Gramps picked it up. Uh-huh. But, you know, I've never been quite this close to someone doing that. And I don't know, does everybody use their mouth the way you do?
I'm not really sure. I kind of discovered it in my early 20s, out in the woods, just experimenting and really listening to the earth around me and the wind blowing and just trying to really just feel that vibration, you know, and just like kind of connect with the earth. And the more I would detune my guitar to let my guitar kind of just relax, the more I would relax, and it would, the sound would get deeper into my chest. And then it just, I hit this, all of a sudden it just cracked, and it went, oh, started doing that. And then years and years of practicing. And I actually started watching a little bit of Tuvi and throat singing lessons to kind of, you know, show some gratitude towards the grandfathers of it. And really, you know, just study what they do with their, how they talk about moving their tongue around. And it's just, it's like a snake of vibrations. And
it's fully magical and just takes over my body as well. Your the vibrations come right over here. So were you doing, you had a guitar, so you were playing music. Were you doing music seriously at that point?
Playing a lot of rock and roll and just listening to psychedelia music, a lot of Spaceman 3 and Spiritualized, Brian Jonestown Massacre, the Dandy Warhols, the Warlocks, Black River Motorcycle Club. That whole scene of psychedelia music really opened up my brain into like, oh, you can play music and have fun and just play one or two chords and get lost in sound and get lost in this spiral-shaped music that just is so much fun to play, and it you don't have to be super technical about everything. And once, you know, I found that in my, like, late teens, early 20s, it really opened up, and then just kind of, you know, put my shoulders down and open-tuning guitars. I recommend that to anyone that just started playing guitar or hasn't played guitar, to open-tune their guitars so they don't have to play any chords. They don't have to figure out a solo. You just strum it, and it makes a noise. And so you can really just breathe with it and hum with it. And it's like a Shruti box, or those meditation kind of airbag boxes, and different, like hurdy-gurdies.
Chanting.
Chanting. And there's a, it's like it turns it into a meditation instrument.
And I, if we weren't on radio, I could have sat here for forever and just listen to you. How does it feel to you? Because I don't, you talked about deep here. I'm watching your mouth do some very interesting moves that would shape some of them.
Yes.
Have you figured out how to protect, did you have to figure out how to protect your body parts too, your throat, your voice?
The more lessons I was listening to, it's there's different styles of throat singing, and there's a high pitched one that they do where it's more like a like you know they kind of like strain their
push
vocal
it.
Yeah, and I think if you do that the wrong way, you might hurt your vocals. But a lot of people just can't get that low end, which comes more natural to me. And the more throat singing lessons I was listening to, they would say, you know, well, just work on the high pitched ones, and eventually you might get to that lower register. But the lower register hit right away for me, and that was the one that feels good and just is natural to me.
Wonderful. And now, do you play almost normal music too, whatever that might mean?
Yeah, I mean,
I have your CD here. I don't know when you put it out. There's 2014.
Yeah, that's
an and I am going to put on a piece of your music, Particles of Gold.
Yes.
So is this all music that you wrote?
Yes, that's all original music. And there's maybe one or two little throat singing things in there, but that was more, I was still kind of discovering it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of, there's some country, some gospel music. I'd say it's country, gospel, rock and roll, world music glazed over with Enya. And that's the best way I can explain it. It's just Enya inspired.
That's great. You know, it's funny because the first time I heard Enya was the same time that I was with the Tibetan Buddhists in India and Nepal.
I'm a big fan of Enya.
Yes, right. So tomorrow evening, what are you going to be doing for folks at the Sou'wester? What kind of...
Little mix of everything. I have, I'm going to be doing some beatboxing. I have a Native American flute that I play, which actually came from Carlos Nakai, famous. My partner, her uncle records him, and he was getting rid of some flutes. Just so happened to give me a flute from Carlos Nakai, so I get to play a real Carlos Nakai flute tomorrow. Yeah. And
sounds like you definitely go to the source for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, very definitely. Nice. And then I'll be doing some throat singing, and I have a trunk that has a bass drum, a snare drum, and a tambourine built into it that I play with my feet. So I play drums with my feet, I'll play the guitar, I'll do some harmonica, I got some beatboxing, we'll do some native flute, we'll do some throat singing.
Sounds fabulous. We'll,
I'll say that I'm playing Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit, but then I won't. I'll take a break, I'll come back, and I won't play it. So I got jokes, too.
Okay. Thomas Mudrick, you live in Portland.
Silverton, Oregon.
Silverton, right.
Yes, I do have another band in Portland I play with called Mother Mariposa. And I do that up there in Portland. But
nice.
Yeah.
And also, you have worked with KBOO and and KMUD. Is this your first time on KMUN, though?
Yes, first time.
Okay, well, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You started with such a big bang that I can't even call you a virgin anymore. You crashed right through right away. So thank you so much for coming in and for sharing that with us. I'm going to
truly
put on a piece of your music, Particles of Gold, from your album.
All right, I'll be playing this song tomorrow night.
Okay. The album is Abiqua?
Abiqua, yes.
Abiqua. Okay. Thanks so much, Thomas. I look forward to your returning to the area again.
Oh, I'll be back. I love Astoria.
Beautiful.
Love it.
Okay. Folks, you got choices. This is a huge weekend. More coming up. My next guests are also performing tomorrow night. It's a May 4th celebration. Stay tuned, KMUN Astoria, KTCB 2.
I'm
And that's Thomas Mudrick sounding like a folk singer instead of a throat singer. So you can catch him tomorrow evening at the Sou'wester in Seaview. Now we're back to Astoria with my last guests of today. And that would be Deborah Meyer. We're going to find out if that's really how she says right. her name. And oh, God, you look so familiar. Why, that would be... Deborah is a soprano, and with her is the one and only Carrie Lewis.
Hello.
Hi, Carrie. One of my all-time favorite guests, as you can tell, because I try to get him in here as often as possible. And it happens. Now, these... Were you both in the schools or just...
Yes, yes, yes. We just came. We went to the middle school.
Middle school.
Yeah.
Okay.
What a bunch of kids those are. Oh, my goodness. They're so smart. They asked incredibly hard questions.
They did.
Really?
And big observations as well. They were very...
For instance, they were talking to us about the differences between German and Italian music.
I learned things. So.
How did they know this stuff?
Just listening.
They're good listeners.
Yeah, we sang an Italian aria, and then we sang a German aria, and I asked them to tell us the difference between the different repertoire, and they really picked up on stuff.
They got it.
Wow,
yeah,
that is
great.
Very impressive. Mm-hmm. This is middle school, folks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Our future.
Eat your heart out.
Right, our future, exactly.
Thank goodness. We don't have it necessarily. But
exactly.
So you are here because tomorrow evening...
As if there isn't enough already happening here.
Yeah, exactly.
The night, this is the big night of Astoria. It's crazy. It's at 7 o'clock at the Liberty Theater, which is 12th and Commercial. And you can go, I'll tell you right now, you can go to libertyastoria.org and read about Deborah and Carrie. And I'm going to let them, however, tell us. Well, Deborah's got, they both have bios, that's crazy, but I've done over Carrie. And it looks like you've sung just about everybody. And you said German, I'm looking at it, and Italian. And do you do any English?
I have English pieces on the recital tomorrow, but I haven't done any English or American operas that I can remember at the moment.
Did you start out at the age of 3 as an opera singer?
No, I wish. That would be a nice thing to say. No, I started at 24.
Work?
My debut was at 24. So, yes.
But when did you start singing?
I sang as a child, I was always singing. And when I was about 13, I asked my parents for voice lessons. So I grew up in a small town. Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Sturgis, Michigan. It's about 10,000 people, let's say. So my mother took me to Kalamazoo, which is the big city for us. And I found a professor at Western Michigan, and I started lessons. So as I developed and as I started studying, it was obvious that classical repertoire was more my thing. So I was
for your interest or for your voice?
Both, actually, but really for my voice.
Yes.
That's just I just felt really at home once I started singing Italian art songs.
And, oh, sure.
That's got to be the same for instrumentalists, you know, different genres of pianists. That must be the same, Carrie, no?
No, I must say Italian art songs never...
No, smarty pants. This is why I have Carrie with me,
yes,
to keep it honest. But anyway, so that's
funny.
Really... Yeah, exactly. So that's just where I felt at home, for whatever reason. It was something I knew that I was, I don't say good at, but I could do. So
and,
it inspired
and
me.
And have you been singing... Ever since?
Yes, I'm very lucky to say that generally speaking, I make a living as a singer or as a teacher. So I've had music in my life forever, thank goodness. So, yes.
I marvel at this. I mean, I know, I've known Carrie and heard his story for several years, although you're going to have to tell it because there are people listening.
That maybe haven't heard.
Who've never heard.
Sure.
Yeah. But the idea, especially though, when you're using your voice, mm-hmm. as we were saying, this young man who was just in here doing throat singing, and I asked him, did you have to figure out how to protect your voice? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, it's not like with an instrument, if a string breaks or if something goes wrong,
absolutely.
You can get another instrument.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
Carrie and I have been, Carrie must be bored to death with my stories about this, but absolutely, even today, because we, you know, I had a long flight yesterday. I came in from Indiana and Portland, and we rehearsed yesterday, and I've been talking a lot because I'm so happy to see Carrie and Dorothy. So we've been visiting, and I know now after I've been on the radio with you and I was with the students singing and talking that this evening I have to be quiet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm probably going to do a little bit of steam inhalation just to keep my vocal folds moist, let's say, but the most important thing for me is to maybe just be quiet for the evening. So
that can
vocal
be
rest, let's say.
Vocal rest. Mm-hmm. I should try that sometime.
No, you use your voice all the time as well.
I know.
Yeah.
And people tell me I should try it, but I don't think it's because of my voice. But that's another story. So you go to other parts of the world as well?
I do.
How does that work?
Do you mean as far as the
do you get a call?
Yeah, I have a manager, and normally the she sets up an audition for me, or if someone asks for me, they might contact her. But and then I'm contracted a few months in advance or whatever, and then I go wherever I'm.
And the languages, how does that work for you?
Well, I studied languages in college, of course, and
as part of the music,
of the discipline. Yeah.
Did you study the languages themselves? I mean, as languages, so you could converse in them, or did you just study like pronunciation?
Both. That's a good question. We have when you do a music degree, you take Italian class and German class and all of that. So I did that, but also we have diction classes. Mm-hmm. That's right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So we could be sitting here speaking in Italian or German if
could.
Not me.
Hopefully, right.
If the other two people in the studio.
I don't want to imply that I'm completely fluent in those languages. I just mean that you have to have a working knowledge of the languages
if
you're going to sing.
Ask her about German, though.
What about German?
Please do tell. Well, I was curious when Deborah showed up. I said, okay, her name is spelled M-A-Y-E-R, and I don't know what that is. So I said, how do you say that? Yeah.
Well, I say Meyer. Carrie's asked was talking about that. My father's German, and he came to this country in 1963, I think it was, and he had a perfectly beautiful name. It was Hans Meyer. And being that he was in America and a young boy, and he had to do his last year of high school and try to fit in and, you know, be an American, he went by John Mayer. We have John Mayer, the pop singer, when I started studying classically, let's say my teachers were European, and immediately they said Deborah Meyer. And so I went back to that. My grandparents were thrilled because my grandparents went by Meyer.
Right.
That's the German pronunciation of M-A-Y-E-R. So it's a little confusing when I introduce my parents. I'll say, is my mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. Mayer? And they're thinking, well, why? I thought your name was Meyer.
Right.
So,
but
was it your mother who was somebody was a mayor of your town?
Better. Oh, another plug. My mother was the mayor of Sturgis, Michigan. And so she was Mayer. For a while.
That's
so
wonderful.
Exactly. That's right. I forgot about that.
Oh, I love it.
I told too many stories last night, right?
So is that why she went from mayor just to be able to?
Just to be. I don't know. You'll have to ask her. I don't know.
And then people had to spell Mayer, M-A-Y-O-R.
That's true, right.
M-A-Y-E-R.
Exactly.
Oh, Lordy.
And sometimes I tell people you can say my name like remember Oscar Mayer?
Yes.
Maya Bologna has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R.
But it's It is. You are E-Y. I think of Meyer as M-E-Y-E-R.
Sure,
that's why it was.
Yeah.
I thought of it as M-E-I-E-R.
Well, there's so many ways to write and pronounce Meyer. It's true.
And then there's M-Y-E-R.
There you go. Yeah.
Meyer. Now, Carrie, the guy who keeps piping up, who is a phenomenal pianist, and if you were lucky, you actually caught him last week, in addition to being on this show with another funny guy who happens to be an amazing clarinetist. I was not familiar with him. Now everybody keeps telling me, are you kidding? He's on every album in the station. What are you talking about? That was David Schifrin, and he was, the concert was wonderful with just the two of them. And I think your concert will be the same.
I hope so.
I find it often is more not just interesting, but I can be absorbed right in because there is the focus right here, as opposed to the entire orchestra, which is also wonderful, but it's a very different experience. And so this concert tomorrow evening is at the Liberty, which of course has fabulous acoustics as well. And I'm sorry, there's so many things. I'm sorry, it's happening, you know.
So many things in this weekend, I realize. Yes. I'm going to just stick around.
But, well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Now, you came from, it's not the East Coast. I don't even
Midwest.
Know.
I'm from the Midwest,
Indiana.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't even know. Did you just come out here for...
I did, yes.
Yeah, any other concerts?
No, I was here. I was in Astoria with the music festival 2 years ago.
Ah.
And that's where I met Carrie the first time. And we collaborated on the Wesendonck-Lieder, Richard Wagner's Wesendonck-Lieder. And I sang the Beethoven Ninth with the festival. And I don't remember who I was talking to, but I'm so in love with Astoria that I was spreading the word that, please have me back. I want to come back.
Right.
So this has been in the works for a couple of years. And right away, when we were organizing the recital, they said, we have to find a pianist. I said, can't we get Carrie? Can we please contact Carrie?
Please.
So that's how this all came about.
Clearly. Mm-hmm. And I also read something about the, is Wagner one of your specialties?
I would say that. I don't know if it's a specialty, but it's what I sing most often.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that because there is so much of it, or it works for
it
you?
It just works for me. And that's funny. We were talking about the students earlier.
Yes.
They noticed that, didn't they?
They did.
I sang an Italian opera aria from Tosca, and then I sang Dich Tolle Halle from Tannhäuser, and the students really seemed, I don't know if they necessarily liked the German better, but they could tell that the observations they made, they could tell that was more my repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting. Kids are much smarter than we give them credit for.
Right. Were these music students or
yes.
everybody?
Yeah, we had band, orchestra, and choir.
Lovely, mm-hmm. lovely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for helping to educate.
It's important.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. especially when you live in a place that's a little bit set aside
sure.
from the big city.
Yeah, of course.
And for them to see real artists, mm-hmm. it would be lovely if some of them were able to come to the concert, mm-hmm. too, tomorrow evening. So, now, Carrie, I'm not quite through with you, though.
Oh.
I really do want to, because Carrie is here for, he treats us very, very well. The truth is, he's a hot shot. And my favorite thing to do, but I didn't get to do it last week, is to go upstairs and look down on you playing the piano. It was a treat last week, though, because my neighbor right on my road out in Brownsmead was turning pages for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she did a wonderful job.
For the first time I've ever seen her up on stage doing that.
She wasn't sure she was happy doing it, but she was just fine.
Well, I can't imagine how any page turner could be happy.
It's a thankless job. Nobody notices you. Nobody notices you unless you do something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you're very helpful because you do give a nod.
The trouble is that my page turners have to learn how to interpret whether that's a nod that says "turn now, darn it," or "turn now." This is such exciting
right.
music.
Right.
I did see a couple of smaller nods, mm-hmm. but I started getting you. I was sympathizing with. Fortunately, I don't read music, so it can't happen.
Nobody's going to ask you to.
Nobody's going to ask. But you've been around the block as well, including other parts of the world. I picked up on Warsaw.
Yeah.
What took you to Warsaw?
We had a friend who was a composer who lived in Warsaw, and he wrote a piece for our trio. And we went over and did the premiere of the piece in Warsaw in the Philharmonic Hall, and then we recorded it for Warsaw Radio.
Really?
Yeah.
Where is that recording?
It's out.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is good. We'll talk.
Okay.
But meanwhile, the trio, did that include Dorothy?
Yes.
At that time?
Yes.
Right.
It was Dorothy and Bill Prussel, a concertmaster of Cleveland.
Okay. And, of course, you've played at the Carnegie and the White House.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. That was back in the Jimmy Carter days.
Oh, okay. I was wondering. I knew it couldn't be now.
Oh, my.
You wouldn't have survived. But and London. And what I love also is being able to stay with the music for so long. And I'm wondering if that, using your voice, makes a difference. Do you feel there's a shelf life? In other words, because it's part of your body,
yes.
as opposed to...
Oh, I see. You mean like how long would a singer's career?
Can you go forever? Until...
I sure hope so. I'd like to. But certainly when someone's in their 40s or their 50s, that's when they say that I guess you've, I don't want to say blossomed, but that's one of the better times for a career. But it's really a matter of just taking good care of yourself, to be really honest.
Is it true that men's voices blossom or bloom at a different stage of their lives than women's?
I think so. My husband, who's a tenor, he tells me that he, for instance, didn't have his high C until he was 24. So, you know, the voice changes and all of that, so it took a time. But then I have students that are bass voice, that sometimes are fully developed. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that bass? There was a boy in the choir that asked those questions right away. I thought, and it was such a beautiful voice, a speaking voice, and I thought, I wanted to say something. And I thought, don't call him out because maybe he wants to fit, you know. But you could tell that his voice was already settled.
Particularly
in
for this age. I mean,
eighth grader, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I was quite impressed.
And I'm interested that you said your husband's able to reach the higher notes as you get older. I'm thinking the voice drops.
Well, no, I'm saying that what I mean is he didn't start with his high C until he was 24. So he was training.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He still has a high C, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that it took a while for him to get that together as a young student.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the concert is going to be wonderful. Tell us what you're going to be singing.
Oh, we're doing all kinds
playing.
Of stuff. We have some opera arias. The first half is, I guess I would call classical. So we have some opera arias and some of my favorite songs from Richard Strauss.
Mm-hmm.
The second half is more popular and hopefully a little bit more audience friendly, perhaps.
We're doing an interesting, I think it's worth talking about the Bernstein stuff.
Oh,
She's doing one song that was written back in it's a protest song for Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
By?
Leonard Bernstein. Uh-huh.
Really? Leonard Bernstein.
And it was written, who was the singer?
It was written for, Barbara Streisand did the premiere. I'm certainly no Barbara Streisand, but it's called So Pretty, and it's just a very short, simple song, and that's another piece that the students really picked up on.
The kids picked up on it.
Every bit.
Yeah, they caught the irony of what's going on with
exactly.
it.
Yes, exactly. And foreboding, they said.
And then also the other thing of his that we're doing is... a song that he wrote that kept getting knocked out of musicals.
Oh,
it was
Peter
in
Pan,
this music,
Peter Pan,
it was in one musical and another, and they kept saying, well, we don't have time for it. And it just kept disappearing.
So did it just...
I'm not even sure if it was... It was supposed to be in Peter Pan, and then they didn't use it. And I think, if I'm looking at the copyright, I'm pretty sure that it wasn't even done until 1992, so that was after his death.
Oh, wow.
And I heard it a few months ago with the great Isabel Leonard, and I fell in love with it, and I said, Carrie, we have to do this.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. The program, the people, and the opportunity for you in the audience to catch this wonderful concert. Does the concert have a name?
No, I guess not.
Deborah
Meyer and Carrie Lewis.
Carrie Lewis.
Together
and
again.
Deborah Meyer, M-A-Y-E-R, and Carrie Lewis. Meyer and Lewis. That's
there you go, Meyer and Lewis.
That sounds like a good name for a department store.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God. Anyway, it's much better than that. It's at the Liberty Theater. It starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening on that night of, there is going to be just music going up to the skies tomorrow evening. And thank you both so much for coming in. Have a wonderful concert. And again, go to libertyastoria.org. And you can get your tickets that way. You don't have to come that much earlier. And you can pick where you want to sit as well. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Delightful to meet you.
Thank you.
I'm going to play a little music today, as I said. Sunday is Cinco de Mayo. Today at 4:30, in a half an hour, I'm going to be at the Liberty upstairs in the McTavish Room chowing down on a delicious meal that is benefiting the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council Coalition. And then at 6 o'clock, you can go to libertyastoria.org to get your ticket for that. But at 6 o'clock, it's free and open to all people. So you can just join, bring the family tonight, 6 o'clock at the Liberty, and Cinco de Mayo for everybody. So much is going on. I spent 3 hours writing this up. I have a full page of events. No time to do it. There is a contra dance at AAMC tonight. Tomorrow evening at 7 There's also the Astoria Library celebrating American Asian Heritage Month with a fabulous film. And this is Loyalty Days on the Peninsula in Ilwaco. Thanks for being here, folks. Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB.